Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. This podcast is all about conversations about healing and rising from the ashes of your grief and trauma. In this podcast, we will be deconstructing and highlighting the different aspects of grief and loss. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. I am Dr. Zampatella, and I'm glad that you are joining us for another episode. Today, I am going to be interviewing Dr. Mika Wycheck. Liz Mika Wycheck is a licensed clinical psychologist here at the Center for Grief and Trauma Therapy, and she's got like really cool specialties, so I had to ask her to come in and talk about them. So welcome.
Thank you.
Again.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. introduce yourself
sure.
to our viewers.
So I started off as a school psychologist and worked with you and Dr. Turley with
my integrative psychology group.
Mm-hmm. Doing my postdoc, and you sparked my interest in doing therapy. Thank you.
I poach people from my own other business.
Completely
it's not
did.
The first time.
and so I fell in love with doing it. And so all of these different specialties sort of came up that I was like, yeah, that strikes a chord with me. And one of them was working with people who have had religious trauma, people who are recovering from religious trauma.
Okay.
And that was one of the things that I've really been working on lately. I also did, as we talked about before, working with first responders. I'm also a board certified school neuropsychologist, and I work in a high school in the area.
Brave.
Yes,
you are a first responder.
Right. Some days it feels like it. So yeah, and then a certified thanatologist now.
Yes, you are.
So yeah, I have a lot of different interests, and I kind of I find that I have to sort of reel myself back. I'm like, ooh, that looks cool. I want to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this was definitely one of the things that I was passionate about, working with people with religious trauma. I come from a religious upbringing to some degree, and so I can identify with some of it. And so it's really important to me that people know that there are secular options out there.
Mm-hmm. So this is a sticky topic.
It is.
Right?
Yes.
So when people start bringing up, what do they say that you don't talk about at dinner parties?
Right. Religion
and
politics.
Religion, politics, and, well, and sex, supposedly, but, right? Isn't that in there?
I mean,
did I just make that up?
I think you did.
I imagine
people talk more about sex at dinner parties than religion and politics.
Be,
or at least it's less infuriating.
It,
is that
maybe,
the right word?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. That you would think between the two of us.
Yeah, come up with the word.
Oh.
Yes, definitely. It's less sticky to talk about, I would think, sex at a dinner party than religion and politics. People get absolutely heated about those things. And so when I'm talking about, and this is one of my classes, remember, at the college, when I talk about specialized therapy,
Because you teach as an adjunct professor with your spare time.
Yes, with my spare time, I do teach as an adjunct at a couple of the colleges around here.
But what is, and, when you say religious trauma,
is
that?
When we're talking about religion in general, and we're talking about this kind of topic, working with people who have had religious trauma, I like to make it very clear that this is not religious bashing. This is not religion bashing. This is talking about people who have had negative experiences because of a person who was in a position of power in a religious setting who have abused that power. So I just want to make it clear that I'm not coming for religion. That's not my job. In fact, I have clients who come to me and say that they find a sense of comfort and community from their religion. And if it's affirming, if it's inclusive, and if it's empowering, absolutely, we can talk about that. And I encourage them to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about religious trauma, we're talking about someone who's sustained trauma. Has had a negative impact in their life because of someone who's abused their power from a religious position.
And could you give a couple of examples? I mean, obviously one main example that pops into people's heads a lot is sexual abuse,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Are there, definitely,
abuse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's movies out there about it. There's websites about it. It's
they're not the only one.
Absolutely
there's so much.
Not.
There are cults. That's
absolutely.
Religious trauma. There's the whole purity culture.
Talk about that.
The purity culture is the one where you see like the wedding rings, the girls marrying their dads, promising to stay celibate. It's a very fundamentalist meaning, almost extreme version of, you know, keeping purity. So there's not even any dating. A lot of times, there's not even really dating. So the person that you end up marrying may have been just your buddy. And that was the person that you thought, oh, I guess you're a man and I'm a woman, so I guess we should get married because we like each other. Mm. There's not a lot of education in it. It's just, they keep you very naive. And it's very, very specifically, the man is in this role, the woman is in that role, and you do not deviate from those roles.
Tend to be that way? Where it's like it's a very man, woman, man in power?
In the purity culture,
In the
yes.
purity culture.
Yes.
How about in other, again, this is sticky, but mm-hmm. I'm putting it out there anyway. Do we tend to find the religious trauma being perpetrated more by men than women? Because
yes.
they're in
yes.
positions of power more often
than
exactly women.
And that's exactly what it is. They're more often in the fundamentalist sects of various religions,
okay.
and all of them have their more fundamentalist groups, mm-hmm. right? It does tend to be more male led,
okay.
and so they tend to have more opportunity to have that to be abusive, to you abuse that power.
I wonder why that is. Just historically, just out of curiosity, like I wonder why, because a lot of cultures used to be more matriarchal,
mm.
and then they got shifted into
mm-hmm.
patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I need to take more classes. I'm just curious about the shift and if there is research on levels of abuse that have occurred. You know, more in the more
that
matriarchal.
That is an interesting
right?
question. If there was in the more matriarchal, there are not a lot of them that
no.
I can pull up in my brain right
no,
in the
they
moment.
No, they tend to be more like pagan. And mm-hmm. when I say pagan, and I want to make this very clear, we're not talking satanic. Paganism is the worship of the land, is the worship of the energies of the
or even
god
Wiccan.
And goddess, or Wiccan, or, mm-hmm. you know, we're not talking,
sure.
you know, people who are sacrificing anything. That's more Satanistic.
Well,
that's different.
We can get into a whole conversation yeah. about Satanism and what it is
and what it isn't and all of those things too.
There's a lot of myths surrounding that as well.
My husband and I went to Salem
mm-hmm.
Probably our anniversary or something. And we were going through, you know, we like to do the ghost walks.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who was doing the ghost walk was the head of the satanic religion,
mm-hmm.
You know, there. And he was making a lot of clarifications of what it was. And I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
that is not what I thought. Like, that is not the cult in my head that I thought.
Sure.
Like, don't get me wrong. It's
yeah.
still not my gig. But
yeah.
as long as nobody's
Same.
Getting
yeah.
hurt
mm-hmm.
or no things are being hurt and they're not, you know.
Right.
You know,
so there's a lot of myth
yeah,
around
a lot
that.
Of myth around
there's
all
There's a lot
of
myth around atheism. And
Tons.
Well, you must hate God.
No.
But that's
yeah.
not what it is. It's just...
Yeah.
don't have those beliefs
right.
in a higher power. So yeah.
So sorry There's for taking your little
That's okay.
side
That's a
route,
nice little rabbit
well,
hole that we went down.
Nobody talks about
nobody
it.
Does.
And we could talk about it.
Yeah.
That's the
Well, because it's your podcast.
It's,
so we get to talk about whatever we want.
Talk about how cute your boots are.
Thank
I don't give
you.
A crap. That's
Thanks.
this is the joy of it. Okay, so back to what you're here
okay.
for. So religious trauma. You said mm-hmm. examples are being in like a purity
Right.
Did I get that right? And those
right.
that are actually like, there's abuse, sexual, physical,
right.
emotional abuse.
Yeah.
Those are very cult. Yeah.
Right.
Like you're kind
mm-hmm.
of being, drinking the Kool-Aid kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. That was a cult.
Yeah.
Right. And when we're thinking about cults, what really makes it a cult is you can't leave. Right. If you leave, all these bad things will happen. No one will talk to you again. You can't talk to your mother again. You'll be ostracized. So there's that piece. There's also cults tend to keep you very naive.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you think about Scientology, for instance, they're not allowed to watch the television or they're not allowed to read the newspaper. And They keep them very naive and keep the information very controlled. And then they're also not allowed to leave, right? Because if you leave, I mean, how do you say, yes, it's okay, I'm going to go leave my religion and I'll never talk to my mother again. Yeah. It'll be fine. So it's a fear-based organization that controls the information and keeps people controlled through. I always said to my son, if they can keep you naive and they can keep you scared, they've got you under control.
Yeah.
Whenever we would talk about, you know, different things in history.
And they can keep you in control by making you think that you're loved and cared about.
Absolutely.
You're being protected. You're
it's
being
one of
loved.
The biggest
you're
be- forms
you
of
know
control.
What I mean? Like,
totally.
Oh my God, you're under our wing. We wouldn't let anybody come in and hurt you.
Leave,
and
if you leave, everyone's going to come for you.
And it's not safe out there
right.
and that kind of thing. So it ends up very confusing for people when they're, and there's also part of them may really need to feel protected
absolutely.
And loved
need a
and
community.
Part of it. Absolutely. So how does somebody even identify that they're being they are a victim of religious trauma? How do they know?
So if you think about some of the more publicized people who have come out recently about with some of these things, they have gotten a little bit of information, which of course then makes them dangerous.
Right.
I thought this was true, but that's not true.
Oh, what was her name?
That Leah Remini.
Yeah, she's really out there.
Oh yeah,
she's got lots and lots and lots to say, and it's
they ticked off the wrong girl with that.
They ticked off the wrong girl.
She's really going. She's on fire about it, which I applaud. Because again, part of it too is the secrecy.
Yeah.
If they can keep all the information, they have that control over
the information. Yeah, why does it have to, if there's nothing to hide,
right.
and this is supportive,
right.
and it is an open community, and like why does everything have to be so secret, like you
right.
just said? Why are we holding things, like why do we have people that are willing to follow you
right.
if you're not doing something? Like,
so there's
creepy.
All that cognitive dissonance, right?
What do you mean by
cognitive
that?
Cognitive dissonance is, so if I, and she talks about this, right? So she goes through all of these stages and has paid all of this money, and you get to a certain point and you hear all of this was not true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm in it now.
Right.
Right? So it kind of, I'm in it. I might as well stay in it.
Right.
Until something is important enough to make you leave.
Mm.
And for a lot of people, that never happens. You know, for some people who are courageous enough to walk away from everything they know and everyone they love and take that step, you know, maybe they never get to talk to those people again. Typically they do, but you know, that's a big step. So that in itself is a lot of loss and trauma, just walking away from everything you know and everything you believed.
And it's scary to go out into the world
terrifying.
If you had been so, you know, so protected or helping. And we know this is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we know this thing because as you're talking about it, we're like, yeah. But I mean, there are Netflix specials on this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this is happening.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, well, where are these people going to for help? Do they even know where to go get
right.
help? So how does somebody, as a therapist, go, you know what? I'm going to make this one of my specialties, and this is how I'm going to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that that I started thinking about, and I am an atheist, and so I wanted therapy, but I did not want a therapist who was going to, you know, talk to me about Jesus and God, which we should not be doing anyway. That's not our job. We should not be pushing our own agenda. If they bring that to us, that's fine.
I was going to say, we can talk about spirituality.
Absolutely.
Hold on, I'm going to challenge you on
oh,
that,
totally.
But yes, not what you're saying.
No,
you're
we can.
Pushing our own agenda.
But we should not be pushing it
Agreed.
On someone else.
Agreed.
So I, just like they should not be pushing Christianity on me, I should not be pushing atheism on
right.
anyone else.
Yeah, but come in and talk about it
come
for sure.
Come talk to me about
Absolutely.
It. And I always ask my clients,
sure.
like, do you find comfort in religion?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find a sense of community? If so, let's use that strength.
Good.
Let's use that. If that makes you feel good, if this is a strength for you, let's use it. But
it.
I will never say, I will never start questioning, well, why do you believe that? You know, that's not my place. That's
right.
not my job. And as therapists, it's unethical for us to be pushing our
that's
own
right.
agenda.
That's right.
But there are so many stories of people who do. And so they're recovering from religion, that organization started the Secular Therapy Project.
Okay.
And it is a roster of vetted therapists who are proven to use evidence-based practices, who are very clear about not using any religion. They're very clear about not pushing any religious agenda in their therapy. And it's a very, like, having gone through it, I can tell you it's a very thorough vetting process. Mm-hmm. Not so much for the clients. The clients also have to be vetted a little bit. You have to provide an email address and make sure that, you know, you're a real person, because mm-hmm. there's a protection for the therapists as well.
Sure.
But it's all anonymous, right? Like, so the client emails.
And then, through the secular project.
Yes.
Oh,
through
okay.
the secular therapy. If you go to the secular therapy project mm-hmm. Organization, that website, you can find a therapist in your area, which fortunately there are a couple more. At first, when I first started it, I was the only one in the area. Now there are a couple more, I noticed, which I'm very happy about. But they email, so a potential client would email me through the website.
Okay.
And then I can take a look at it and decide if that's something that I want to do. I can email them through the website and I can say, okay, absolutely, here's my phone number, give me a call and let's find a intake position for you.
Gotcha.
But it's separated at first to protect both of us, actually.
It's perfect, because mm-hmm. I mean, already you're saying, like, there might be a lot of ambivalence about leaving,
right?
Or they don't want anybody to know,
right.
And they need to know that things are confidential.
Yes.
And it sounds like it's a nice, safe kind of intermediary.
Yes.
Where it's like,
yeah.
Yep. So, well, you said there's a very serious vetting process for therapists.
Yeah, they look at my websites. They want my license number. They want all of the training that I've had. They want to know that I'm using. Not only do they want to know that I'm using evidence-based therapies, they want to know which ones I'm using and how I was trained in it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very thorough.
Good.
Which I was thrilled about. That's perfect. I would rather be carefully vetted, knowing that that's the standard that they hold.
How would somebody, like if I had a loved one mm-hmm. that I thought was in a cult, and he, she, they, you know, looked like they wanted to get out, or they looked like they were being abused. Yeah, I like to throw like fun little curveballs.
This is a curveball.
Yeah, I know.
I would like to say that I could tell you exactly how to do that. I do not.
Right.
But I know that there are people who will help with extraction like that. Yes.
Okay.
But I do not know how that would happen. I think that would be really cool to learn, though. Thanks for my next interest.
You're welcome.
Yep.
I'm here to make your life
now
better.
I'm going to be going to do those. Right. but there are people who do that. I don't know exactly what the process is for that.
See, now we need to know that.
Yes, I do need to know that. And I'm sure that there's an extreme vetting process for that sort of thing as well.
And it's got to be a lot of training, because
safety
measures of that as well.
Yeah.
And like, how do you, if you've got somebody who is, you know, thoroughly in there, and if somebody doesn't want to leave, they don't want to leave.
That's it, too.
You
need to know that this is a person who is interested in getting out, mm-hmm. but just can't.
Right.
That's very different from someone who's like under the delusion of this is a great thing for me. They're mm-hmm. they're gonna go right back, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's not fair.
Yeah, it's not. And that I remember watching some of these Netflix things or whatever, and that's what happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. They go back
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason.
Sure.
And I mean, totally their choice.
Dissonance,
yeah, exactly. And I mean, if that's their choice, that's their choice, you know, mm-hmm. and that's okay. The part that gets upsetting for those of us watching is, are they being hurt in any
right.
way?
Yeah.
So we're talking about like cults right now mm-hmm. and these, you know, what about these traumas that people experience that are like sexual abuse? Like what happens there?
So that would be, that's wrapped up in a whole lot of stuff, right? Because you've got sexual abuse just like any other person who's been abused. But
and
then
there
you,
is a, like, what is it, 1 in 3 women have had some form of sexual
aggression. Yes, I believe it's something staggeringly
aggression.
High.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And we, I don't even know what the rates are. I think it's mm-hmm. 1 in 5 men mm-hmm. have experienced some form of sexual aggression in one way or another, whether or not that's ongoing sexual abuse or inappropriate
assault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So this isn't like just something we're going, this happens once in a while.
Strikingly common. Let me,
before you answer the question,
mm-hmm.
I want to be very clear about something. In general, we do not see priests and pastors and rabbis, and they're not running around abusing children mm-hmm. and taking, you know, that is, mm-hmm. we're not talking about the actual beautiful community that can be created with religion and religious organizations, right?
Again, when you've got an organization with a group of people and that community is affirming and it's inclusive mm-hmm. and, you know, empowering mm-hmm. And
teaches
provides
morals and values.
Yes, and supports your identity, for who mm-hmm. you are instead
Absolutely.
Of trying to change who
And help
you
make
are.
Sense of, yeah, the world, right?
And yeah, and there are wonderful
the
people out there. And if spiritual, if that's your gig, go for it.
Yeah.
Don't hurt anyone. Right. You know, supporting others and so on, that's fine. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about mm-hmm. people who are predatory. We're talking about people who are looking for those who cannot or they can scare into not saying something and who people who are abusing their power. So we're not even talking about religion here. We're talking about people.
We are, yeah.
Yeah.
And power differentials mm-hmm. and
power
just
differentials,
what
absolutely.
Position people are in.
Right.
But this has that the religious part of it that's yes. tied into it that makes it its own unique.
Yes. Right. Which yes. Yeah. Which is what I was going to talk about with the sexual stuff.
Right.
It's like a whole ball of wax wrapped up in another ball of wax. Right. You've mm-hmm. got this sexual issue right now. You've got sexual assault, sexual abuse that's now wrapped up in this religion. Right. That might have a whole lot of guilt and shame and secrecy and blame. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, how many thousands of years were women blamed for their own rapes?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we're talking about someone who maybe is coming out of a religion where even if it wasn't a person of power, if there was an abusive situation, maybe they were told, just shut your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, this, we don't talk about this stuff here.
Right.
And you should just pray for forgiveness.
Right.
Or something
years
like
of
that.
Like years of grooming that may have
right.
occurred and,
yeah.
you know, not even recognizing that and not even knowing that there was something to tell another person about.
Right.
So what do you think leads a person to finally say, oh my God, I have to do something mm-hmm. about this?
I think you get to an extreme point where, I mean, people get to the point where they're like, I would rather not be alive, right? And
wow.
like it gets extreme. Or they get a little bit of information, like we were talking about before, and they're like, I don't think I'm supposed to live like, I don't think this is how I'm supposed to be.
Right.
And that's wonderful and terrifying at the same time. And so hopefully they can find someone who can sort of guide them along that path and help them reestablish an identity and also work through all of the guilt and shame and blame that tends to come with those environments. And the other thing with that you tend to see with a lot of religious trauma survivors is sexual issues, right? Because there's so much of sex wrapped up in religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then a whole sexual identity that may not have been established, or they have absolutely no idea who they are in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all of the sticky topics that come along with the Bible, or honestly any other book, with masturbation, with affairs, with sex outside of marriage, with LGBTQ issues, like all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And now on top of all of those difficulties, you're wrapping it up in religion and shame and, you know, you're not supposed to be that way and God's not going to love you or, mm-hmm. or whatever. So, you know, sometimes people come out of those things and they're like, I still believe in God, but I don't want to feel like that
right.
anymore. So that's a whole different thing to navigate
right.
as well.
Because it's like, I don't want to give up my religion.
Right.
It's not the religion that was the
mm-hmm.
problem. I love the religion. Mm-hmm. I love the learnings and that I have, and I have access to the, you know, the soothing words that I mm-hmm. find in the Bible and things like that. But then I had this other experience over here that's tainting mm-hmm. my ability to be safely connected
right.
to my religious belief system.
Absolutely. If you think about like conversion therapy,
yeah.
right? How traumatic is that?
Yeah.
Or people who have just been completely shunned because of their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. I have an example, and tell me, I don't know if this fits, but I'm kind of curious. And I just want to be very, very clear. I'm changing many of these details here in order to keep confidentiality, mm-hmm. with the, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a client I was working with, and his daughter was not baptized, and he belonged to a religious organization that was very fundamentalist,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted his daughter to be able to make whatever decisions she wanted to make about, you know, her, whether or not she wanted to be baptized there or not. And she died. And like, this religious community was very, very, very close knit.
Mm-hmm.
But when his daughter died, it was, she's in purgatory.
Mm.
That's it. She's mm-hmm. in purgatory. And the entire religious community turned against him.
Yes.
Like, literally turned against him, had some really nasty things to say to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so just at a time when he needed his community the most,
right,
they turned their back on him and shamed and blame and rejection and which is a whole podcast,
yes,
that we've done. And hopefully by this time, if you've been watching Phoenix Rising, you've watched the episode on disenfranchisement. But if you haven't, go back and
that's the definition,
like,
right?
So
like,
would that be an example,
yeah,
of religious trauma? Because as
absolutely.
I was working with him, the way that we found some healing,
mm-hmm.
was finding another, still the same religion,
mm-hmm.
but different community,
mm-hmm.
and
more
hooking him by more
hope.
Inclusive. Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, and that community was like, no, come on.
Absolutely.
Same exact,
yes,
religion.
Right.
You know, and still having to grieve,
right,
all of the losses,
well,
of all of the
people.
About,
right?
And,
the,
right,
people.
The,
yeah, the people were exclusive,
right,
to him.
It wasn't the
they
religion.
Were, sounds
about
like
it.
Pretty cruel.
It was,
right,
cruel.
So it was, it sounds, yeah, so it's a trauma based in, if it was a trauma, right? Trauma really needs to be defined by the person experiencing.
Definitely
it.
Traumatic
and
for
if
him.
And if he feels like,
yes,
it was traumatic, then yes, that, mm-hmm, would be a religious-based trauma.
It's like
I
being
mean,
punished on top
this
of being
punished.
This was
his community. These were his, mm-hmm, people. This is how part of it, and let's be honest, when you are in a religion, that's a big part of your identity.
Sure.
So a big part of his identity is now turning against him.
Yeah.
And is not probably what he thought it was, right? So
that's the other thing, is grieving what he thought, mm-hmm, he had, mm-hmm, as everything he learned and the time
and how awful to lose that entire support system just at that moment.
And there wasn't anybody that came out and said, you know what, I know they're doing this, but here I am. Like,
wow.
Nobody reached out to him, on top of the fact that he was questioning, like, is my daughter in purgatory? Because that's not congruent with how I understood how,
mm-hmm,
she was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She was involved with this religious community.
Mm-hmm.
She may not have been baptized, but she was a wonderful human being.
Right.
And the idea of, like, and then all of a sudden now there's this challenge about, well, what do I believe? And now,
right,
we're starting to move into complicated spiritual
and
grief.
Yes. And
that's a whole other topic.
You were
for
asking
another
me
one.
About, yeah, how do people tend to start making their way out?
Yeah.
That's exactly how something happens and they start to question, okay, so my daughter wasn't baptized, so now she's in purgatory, but what about a baby that hasn't been baptized yet? That baby hasn't done it. And then they start to question now.
Right.
Now they're starting to question the legitimacy of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's oftentimes, that's certainly how I got out.
It's
I was
wrenching.
Raised,
it's heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I was raised in a Christian, and I was part of a fundamentalist church when I was younger, and I had questions,
mm-hmm,
and they were not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
These questions were not encouraged. And so I went, okay, all right, I don't know about this.
Right.
And some people are able to just go, okay, I'm just going to keep the blinders on and do what you tell me. But you know me, I'm just far too oppositional for that. That's not going to happen for me. I have questions, and they will be asked.
Thank God. Thank God.
So that's a lot of times what happens is they'll start to question, and those questions will be answered either insufficiently or they will be told to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
So that
what do people who are experiencing religious trauma need?
I think what anybody needs with trauma, they need a support system. They need someone to be able to listen, and they need someone who's trained to be able to work with that specific trauma. So I think, you know, if I had heard, a lot of times people who go to the Secular Therapy Project are just people who are atheist or agnostic and just don't want to deal with a therapist that's going to come at them with religion.
Mm.
But I would encourage people who are coming out of some of those more fundamentalist, more extreme groups, cults and so forth, to also go to that website to find a therapist, because again, we're all vetted in using evidence-based practices that are proven to be effective with trauma. And so that, I think, would be definitely one of the first things I would suggest. Mm-hmm. But also gather your resources, just like we all do when we need support. Get your people. If you have left all of your people, it's a good time to start thinking about where you're going to find some new ones. Which is terrifying.
Terrifying.
Right?
And like, where the heck do you go?
Right.
If you were brought up in this one, you know. And this is a range. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing everything from extreme, like control and abuse of, you know, taking away your rights to make choices, all the way to, you know, sexual abuse, to a rejection from a community, about a belief system, and then you're questioning your faith and all. So there's so many different directions to come from. My last question for you is, before I ask you for your three takeaways, you keep saying evidence-based practices, evidence-based practices. Can you give an example of one that might be used?
Sure. Cognitive behavior therapy is one of them. I can give you a couple. EMDR is another one, which I've now fallen in love with. Thanks so much.
That's eye movement.
Desensitization and reprocessing. Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing, which is wonderful.
They use it at the VA. We are all trained in it here at the Center for Grief and Trauma Therapy. I've gotten everybody trained here with it,
And it's been amazing.
It's huge.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have a therapist that has a lot of tools in their toolbox. So EMDR is not always the most appropriate. CBT is not always the most appropriate. So you need to have, and sometimes I pick from, I pick strategies from both and or something else, but something that's been evidence-based, something that has research behind it. We're not going to pick the latest woo, and we want to make sure that we have solid evidence behind what we're doing.
And I think, from what I'm hearing you say, it seems like we probably need somebody who is a little seasoned as a therapist. This isn't something that, you know, a student in the middle of her master's program with no experience needs to be going. You got to work within your area of clinical competency.
Absolutely. So, that's just an ethical thing.
You have a right to vet your therapist just as much as he or she or they has the right to vet whether or not you're a good match for, you know, them.
Absolutely. So. And we talked a little bit before about therapist shopping, and absolutely do that. If you have definitely in this area, you definitely need good rapport. You definitely need a good connection with your therapist. There's a whole lot of trust that needs to happen, because we're talking about someone who's been betrayed at least by one, possibly an entire community of people. This is a person who needs to know that they're safe and probably is going to take some time to feel safe.
Well, and you're, as a therapist, by default, you're already in a position of power. As much as you're not trying to be in a position of power, there's a power differential. I'm not coming to you and going, you're not even going to believe what happened last week. As much as several of my clients want me to come in and do it, and some of my clients will be like, I'd like to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you. But
And that's a great
point. You don't want to abuse that power differential.
You need to be
just
very
like the person.
Careful
very
when
careful.
You're working with religious trauma to make sure that you are empowering and making sure that you're giving them the choices whenever possible, and making sure that you are supporting their identity whenever possible. So that's a really great point. So with some other clients where we could just kind of be like, here's what, you know, here, let's try this and let's do that. You really want to put the onus of decision making and control on them, because they have not had it.
So to have that, being able to own their power and then be able to work, I imagine trying to work with them also on what is it like to feel like you have power? Because that might feel incredibly, that might even be scary.
Completely foreign.
Because what do you mean I have choices that I can make? And now you're free floating out there.
They don't even know they have a voice a lot of times. And here they are trying to, or who they are, what their likes are, they haven't been allowed to have an opinion.
Who they are. So this is a slow going kind
very
of work.
Very slow, yes. You need to be very careful. Yeah, you don't want to re-traumatize or make it worse.
Absolutely. So in looking at today and our topic on religious trauma, which I've never heard hardly anybody ever talk about this other than what I see on TV, what are three takeaways?
So I would say the most important thing is knowing that, like, not all religion is bad. We're not talking about religion. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people who are abusing power here. So we're not religion bashing. Religions that are affirming and inclusive and empowering, I have no beef with. But when we are talking about an abuse of power or any kind of abuse happening, and secrecy or removal of identity is happening, that's what we're talking about here. Okay. For someone who's looking to get away from that, going to the Secular Therapy Project, doing some research in recovering from religion, can be very helpful. And when we're talking about community, recovering from religion, there are lots of communities out there that are atheist, agnostic, simply recovering from religious trauma, and maybe still have a faith-based perspective. That's a great place to start finding a community. So I think that second point is that you're not alone. That's the most important
thing. That's huge.
Yes. Huge. Alone. There's so many people out there who are coming out of those things and would be so welcoming and inclusive. And then I think the final thing would be just really knowing that who you are as a person, whoever that may be, is okay. And getting to know that identity is going to take time. It's scary. But if you have a good therapist to sort of guide you through it, it can absolutely happen. And take your time. Build that good rapport. And like we said before, if you don't have that rapport, find another one.
Yeah.
There are lots of people on the on the Secular Therapy Project website roster. And it's growing every day. Like I said, the first time I looked, I was the only one in the area. And now there are at least two other people in like a 10-mile radius.
I will say, though,
again, we're in Delaware, right? Yeah. So I was looking for one for my aunt down in South Carolina, and not so much luck down there. But
so it just depends on the area.
It does depend on the area, but it is growing, and we are trying to get more.
Absolutely.
More. It is growing. There are more of us popping up all over the place.
And, you know, I think it's an important point to make is that anytime we're talking about trauma, we also need to remember that even in the midst of trauma, there's always grief and trauma, right? We've talked about that. So somebody, you need a therapist who's also very trained in grief, because when there's trauma involved, that's grief therapy. I'm not just like walking next to you as you're going through your grieving process and facilitating that. I am actually utilizing specialized techniques at that point when there's a trauma involved. But the other part there is to remember that there is hope. There is post-traumatic growth. There's a ton of research around it to understand that if you're able to get through this process, if you're able to heal from what you've gone through, the other side of this can include many different areas in which you've been able to grow and find and realize things about yourself and the world around you and the people around you and the meaning that you have in your life that perhaps you wouldn't have known before.
Yeah.
So to let people know that there can be hope, and it may not be easy to get there.
It is not easy.
But it is there.
But it is there, and so fulfilling, so worth it. I've seen it. I've lived it. I do think it's important to get someone who gets it, just because of the terminology. You know, a lot of times, like even secular, the word secular as a person who is in a former fundamental, like the word secular is literally a curse word.
Wow.
And so when I say secular, I have to stop and go, was that the right word?
Do you still feel that?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
You still feel it?
And it's been decades since I've been involved in that. So Secular Therapy Project, having someone who understands like the trigger words and the vernacular in that is super important.
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend going to a vetted website where you can find someone who's experienced in helping you through those things.
I'm so glad that that's available.
Oh, me too.
I mean, that's amazing that that's actually something that's out there.
Yeah.
So,
well, I said, I saw it for myself because I was looking for a therapist. And I went, I think I want to be a part of this. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad that you decided to do that. I mean,
me too.
there's so far few in between mm-hmm. people that are actually willing to kind of go down this route, because it's, like you said, man, this is sticky.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having
yeah,
me.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I'm going to rein you in for another topic.
I'm in.
Sure.
I'm in.
Soon.
We'll find something.
Yeah. Oh, I got a whole list. Anyway, well, thank you for joining us today at Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. Hey, if you have any questions for Dr. Mikowajczyk, or if you have any questions for me, you can put it, go to the Facebook page for the Center for Grief and Trauma Therapy. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, you will see that underneath you can write your comments and you can write questions, and I will keep an eye out on those and bring those questions in for a question and answer episode of the podcast. So I look forward to getting those questions, and I look forward to next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We want to be a resource for anyone who is experiencing loss, and this is a simple way you can help us spread the word. Check out our show description. There you'll find a link to connect with me on social media, as well as helpful articles and resources.